to call the meeting of the Higher Education Committee to order. And first order of business, we have a quorum, which is good, this late in the afternoon. And you're all going to stay to the end, right? We have nothing after this, so we can go till Farm Bureau time. We need a motion to, soon someone has read
Mr.
the minutes.
Mr. Chair, this is over here in the corner.
Oh.
I've read the minutes and would move approval.
Norton, thank you for the motion to approve the minutes. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
No opposition, I guess, so we'll... They're done. Minutes have been approved. Are you ready at the...
Ready on the fire
line. Okay. We have a number of people to hear from today, and we appreciate them all being here. And to start with, we're going to hear from the Interfaculty Organization, IFO. And Jim, would you introduce yourself for the committee, please?
Chair Nornes, members of the committee, good afternoon, and thank you for having me this afternoon. My name is Jim Grabowska. I am currently the president of the Interfaculty Organization. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to you and introduce you to the IFO this afternoon. As I mentioned, my name is Jim. I serve as the president of the Interfaculty Organization. My other day job when I am not doing this is as a faculty member at Minnesota State Mankato, where I am in the Department of World Languages. I actually teach all aspects of Spanish as well as world language education. I'd like to begin my remarks today by applauding former Chairman Pawlowski and thank him for his leadership during the last biennium. His leadership led to a tuition freeze that helped make our universities more accessible, to reduce student debt, but also included the necessary state investment to maintain the high quality that Minnesotans have come to expect from our state universities. We look forward to working with Chair Nornes and this committee to continue reducing student debt and maintaining a public higher education of the highest quality. The Interfaculty Organization is a union that takes professional responsibility for excellent, accessible, and inclusive public higher education in Minnesota. The IFO represents the interests, welfare, and aspirations of all faculty of the 7 state universities of the MNSCU system through collective bargaining, contract enforcement, and advocacy. We take great pride in being the largest university system in the state of Minnesota. 58% of undergraduates in Minnesota are being taught in a MNSCU state university classroom. That means that we educate more undergraduate students on our campuses than all the other institutions in Minnesota combined. The 7 campuses that we represent are located in Winona, Marshall, Mankato, Moorhead, Bemidji, St. Cloud, and St. Paul. You'll have noticed that 6 of our 7 campuses and 85% of our students are located and educated in Greater Minnesota. 82% of our members live and work in Greater Minnesota. The legislature's investment in MNSCU yields tremendous returns. Our faculty are proud to educate the majority of workforce and thought leaders of Minnesota's future. As the chancellor and trustees outlined last week, we educate the vast majority of students in the state. Students that earn a bachelor's degree earn more income and have a lower unemployment rate than their peers who do not enter college or who earn an associate's degree. I want to repeat that your investment in MNSCU yields tremendous returns. In your packet, you'll find a 1-page handout with our logo at the top that outlines the IFO's vision, guiding principles, and general objectives. I want to take one moment to highlight some of those most important parts of that document. As a voice of all state university faculty, we constantly strive toward public higher education of the highest quality, provided by faculty who are active in teaching, research, scholarship, creative activities, and service to their communities. We strive to preserve the autonomy of the state universities and their distinctive missions. We protect academic freedom and the intellectual property rights of faculty. We work toward constructive review processes, peer review processes, that enhance professional improvement and advancement. We work toward shared governance, promoting a professional, cooperative relationship with campus administrators and administrations and the MNSCU leadership. We are actively participating in academic and professional communities and organizations locally, regionally, nationally, and in some cases internationally. We also work for the economic and social progress of our communities, the regions, and the state of Minnesota. I want to emphasize a few final points of that list. To talk about shared governance, to talk about the autonomy of the institutions, to talk about the relationship that we have with our faculty, it's important to understand that each campus will have its own Senate. On Mankato's campus, it's called the Executive Committee, where local decisions and recommendations are made. Each campus has a president, and the president forms part of the IFO Executive Committee. We meet frequently. They bring those suggestions, those ideas, those comments to our board. The board has proportional representation from all of the campuses that we represent. And then the ultimate body for the IFO is our Delegate Assembly, which happens every other year, during which, again, we have proportional representation from all of the campuses. We take all of those ideas, we debate, advocate, adopt, reject ideas that are brought before the body, and those become the guidelines by which we operate. We take very seriously our role in the communities that we serve. We're community leaders far beyond the classroom. We serve our communities in many various ways, as local elected officials, as nonprofit leaders, business consultants, small business owners, and even legislators. I want to take one more minute to talk about how community and student involvement relates to our tenure process. Tenure is often a subject of intense discussion. Faculty at the seven state universities have to demonstrate their competency and high achievement in five different areas. Obviously, teaching, and I've already mentioned research, creative activities, and scholarship. There are three other areas in which faculty have to continually work. That would include their own professional growth and development, contributions to student growth and development, and then contributions to the university and the community. When we talk about serving students, we serve students in one way, that is through the classroom. But outside of the classroom, and again, this is part of the process that each and every faculty member who is either on a probationary track or as a fixed-term faculty member within our system have to demonstrate their excellence. It is through an undergraduate research conference. MNSCU has one of the largest undergraduate research conferences in the United States. Through study away or study abroad or internship work. By the way, the undergraduate research conference is a mentorship relationship between a faculty member and a student. So I, as an instructor, would find a student who has interesting ideas that are presented in the class, invite them to develop those ideas, and mentor them through that process, and then they have the opportunity to present that in a public forum. We privilege study away, study abroad, and internships. A number of our universities actually have divisions that are dedicated to expanding the relationships across the university's programs, but also into the community working with business and industry. And then we also have within our institutions a number of graduate programs, and graduate mentorship is also part of the work that we do. I would give you a short snippet photo, and this is of myself, not to privilege myself, but I happen to know myself best. So I would tell you that in terms of investment in the community, my wife and I are both employed by MNSCU. Both of us are at Minnesota State College, we're Minnesota State University in Mankato. We have three children. Our three children are of college age. All three children are attending MNSCU schools. Now, we would not entrust our students, our children, to institutions that we did not believe provided them with what it is that they are looking for and what it is that they need to be successful. We've made that investment. As I mentioned, my wife works at Minnesota State Mankato. My wife is a dean of the College of Arts and Humanities. We have very interesting discussions at home. And beyond that, both of us have any number of other commitments, investments in the community. We sit arts councils. I personally sit a local school board. We sit in other boards. I'm a member, actually, of the Minnesota Board of Teaching as well. And this is just a small snippet of the activities that our university faculty engage in. There are others that do much, much more. Keeping higher education in Minnesota affordable and accessible is one of the bedrocks of our organization's advocacy efforts. We took the lead on advocating for a state-funded tuition freeze 2 years ago. Our faculty have seen the dramatic effects that student debt and increased student costs have had. Our students are working more hours, spending less time in the classroom focused on learning. In 1980, the state paid 80% of the total cost of instruction at a state college and university. In 1983, through a tough recession, cuts were made, but the legislature passed a goal into statute that it would fund 67% of the cost of higher education at a state college or university. From 1983 to 2003, the state kept its word and funded the 67% in statute. From 2003 to 2013, the costs of higher education shifted dramatically to the students. In 2013, a student at a Minsky University was paying 60% of the costs, when just a decade earlier, they would have only paid one-third. This contract with students has been broken, and we must maintain focus on bringing the costs of higher education back in line with the needs of our students and their families. Now we see average debt levels approaching $30,000. If we want our workforce to be the most skilled and educated in the world, we're not going to accomplish that by saddling our students and their families with thousands upon thousands of dollars in debt, and then expect them to be the consumers that our economy needs to thrive. With additional state funding, this biennium will have the opportunity to bring the costs back to a 50-50 split. That's an honorable place to find ourselves after the depths of where we have been. It took a decade to dig this hole, and it may take a decade to build the ladder to get out. But the legislature needs to continue prioritizing higher education to ensure the long-term viability of our state. Education is the door to our current successes, and the key to the future is accessible, affordable, high-quality education opportunities for all Minnesotans.
Mr. Grabowski, can you wrap it up fairly
quickly? One sentence.
Okay.
We look forward to the opportunity to work with you towards this goal, and I thank you for the time today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. We have a lot of testifiers today, so we're going to have to move it along. Any questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kabowski, is that the correct pronunciation?
Grabowska.
Grabowska.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question for you. I see you said in your statement that keeping college affordable to students is one of the bedrocks of your organization. And then one of your goals is mentioning that you want the state to appropriate more money for higher education. And in the draft here, it looks like Minnesota is not very affordable compared to the other states. We're third highest. So it certainly appears with the two-year universities or the two-year colleges, it's not affordable. What steps are you doing to ensure that it's affordable other than coming to the state asking for more money?
Mm-hmm. Chair Nornes.
Grabowska.
Representative McDonald, thank you for the question. I'm a little confused in terms of cost, because the cost of the Minsky institutions is, from my perspective, exceptionally affordable. I believe last week you were privy to a graph that was shared by the Minsky institutions that listed all of the institutions of higher education in the state, and I believe it was green and red, and all of the Minsky institutions were in the green. We work very diligently to keep those costs down. But in terms of this has been a process that we have been undergoing for a number of years. I would also recall for you comments by the chancellor in which he remarked that the state university faculty took a freeze for 3 years in terms of their income, given the realities that the state was experiencing at the time. Those are the kinds of steps that we've been willing to take in order to ensure continued affordability at the institution.
I just wanted to make one comment. You had indicated community involvement, your specific involvement. I would hope that your organization can encourage, and they already do perhaps, more of that in all the communities where they happen to be employed.
Chair,
I think that's important, that not only in higher ed but also K-12, that those people are community leaders and ought to be very involved. So.
Chair Nornes, that's absolutely the case. I provided just some simple examples that refer to myself, but I can tell you that faculty at each and every institution is involved in the community. That's part of the requirement for us to be successful as we try to progress within the institution.
I would encourage you to continue to remind them of that. So, not that they're not, but I think they need to be reminded. So,
consider it done.
Thank you very much. Oh, we have one more quick question, I think. Representative Pugh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a brief question, wondering what percentage, approximately what percentage of the time your professors spend in the classroom with their students, and how that might have changed, increased or decreased over the course of the last decade.
Chair Nornes.
Hrabowska.
Thank you, Representative. I could not give you a percentage. What I can tell you is that a full teaching load is 24 credits a year, 12 credits per semester. Those would be roughly 4 hours per week that are in the classroom. On top of that, in order to help the students in their coursework, there are an additional 4 hours per hour that we spend available to our students for advising. So I don't know if I'm getting to the question that you're asking, but that's the time that we spend there that is in direct contact with students. In addition, we have, as I mentioned before, the contributions to student growth and development. So, for example, talking about the undergraduate research conference, talking about the capstone projects that many programs have, those are elements that most of our faculty are involved with at the same time. Plus, there are additional mentorship opportunities that faculty are encouraged to embrace that would include all kinds of work outside of the classroom.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then in follow-up, my question is, has that changed at all, either teachers spending more time in the classroom over the years or not?
Chair Nornes? Yes, thank you. At least in my experience, I would say that it has not changed. That has been consistent in the 17 years that I've been with the Minsky system.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony, and we need to move on here. Next, we're going to hear from the Minnesota State College faculty. Norm, is it Halsey?
Halsa.
Halsa.
Chairman Nordis, members of the Higher Ed Policy and Finance Committee, thank you for allowing Minnesota State College faculty time to address your committee. For the record, my name is Norman Halsa. I am the Vice President for Technical Minnesota State College faculty, better known as MSCF to a lot of you. I have taught auto service technology at Northland Community and Technical College, Thiever Falls, since 1978. My wife and I, along with our five children and some of their spouses, have all graduated from Minsky colleges and universities. Minnesota State College faculty is a union that represents approximately 4,500 faculty with a presence in nearly 50 communities in Minnesota. We work, live, play, as well as pay taxes in Minnesota. We have 39 chapters supporting the mission of the 24 Technical and Community College. The majority of our members teach at the 24 technical and community colleges. Minnesota State College faculty are perfectly situated to provide the education that will be needed in the future. We are expert at delivering vocational education and the soft skills necessary for tomorrow's jobs. Of all the educational providers, we have the best and most far-reaching relationships with industry and businesses. We continually update our curriculum to ensure that our graduates are job ready. A few of our statistics, as far as with Minnesota colleges, with our faculty produce 90% of the state's new mechanics, 84% of the construction graduates, 85% of the state's law enforcement graduates, 83% of nursing graduates, and 49 of the state's teacher graduates, 38 of the state's business graduates. MSCF faculty who work with most SEO students in the state are ready to collaborate with high schools to provide a career tech experience which will propel high school students into post-secondary technical training. Through our customized training divisions of Community and Technical College, we deliver, our system can deliver a very nimble product. MSC faculty who teach in the manufacturing trades and skills programs will all have relevant work experience. The knowledge of the work environment enhances the training that our students receive. Our liberal arts faculty provide communication skills, critical thinking skills, global and civic responsibility, along with information and applied technology and personal development. They deliver the education through the Minnesota Transfer Curriculum necessary for transfer. Some of our unique programs our faculty deliver are our stringed instrument repair, seasonal park ranger academy, cardiovascular technology, gunsmithing, engineering fab lab, mechatronics, unmanned aircraft systems. In your packet for today's meeting, there are two pieces of information about Minnesota State College faculty. If you have further questions, there's a contact information for all our officers, and Rick Nelson, our legislative liaison, is at your service. Chairman Norns, I thank you for the time to address your committee.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come down here to testify today. We have a question from Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for your testimony. I think you can answer this question. What percent of your students graduate, okay, and what percent graduate within a four-year period of time?
Well, we're a two-year institution.
Oh, 2 years.
So I hope
no
they
wonder
would
they don't graduate
than 4 years.
Mr. Helsa.
I don't have those percentages in front of me, Representative, but I can surely find out for you and get those information to you.
Okay. I'm very familiar with your school up there in Thief River. I was on the advisory board years ago with Howard Rocky.
I know Howard personally, yes.
Yeah. So it's good to see things are going well up there. So.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Not thank you again for being
thank
here.
You.
Next, we'll hear from the Minnesota State University Student Association.
Good afternoon, Chair Nornes and committee members. My name is Carrie Cooper, and I serve as the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association, MSUSA. I'm also a student at Bemidji State University. Thank you for inviting me to the committee to present today. I hope to accomplish several goals in this presentation. Number one, I want to tell you about MSUSA and the work that we do. Number two, I want to tell you about some of MSUSA's recent accomplishments. Number three, I want to tell you about what is important to students this legislative session. And number four, I want to tell you about my experience at Bemidji State University, which was great, and unfortunately about my student loan debt, which is not so great. MSUSA is a student-run organization that has been around for almost 50 years. The Board of Directors is made up of student body presidents from each of the seven state universities. MSUSA also has three non-voting officers that are elected by students each spring. The student officers and board members direct a small staff in St. Paul, and at this time I would like our Executive Director, Elsbeth Howe, and Director of Government Relations, Sarah Burns, to stand and be recognized. MSUSA is funded by students at the seven state universities, who each pay 43 cents per credit. The purpose of MSUSA is to bring the thoughts, opinions, and personal stories of students to legislators. MSUSA's goal is to inform decision makers about student positions to help legislators create the best higher education laws and policies. MSUSA has a committee on each university campus where students can get involved with MSUSA outreach and also provide input about issues MSUSA works on. In addition, MSUSA brings larger groups of students together three times per year, proportional to the enrollment of their universities, to inform the Board of Directors. Those students take positions on MSUSA's annual budget, governing documents, and legislative stances. With this structure, MSUSA is able to bring student views and positions directly to Minsky, the state legislature, and members of Congress. In addition to its advocacy work, MSUSA also assists students in paying for college through two scholarship programs, One is the Penny Program, founded by former U.S. Congressman Tim Penny, which provides scholarships for students who perform community service and fellowship awards for students who take unpaid public service internships at the state and federal levels. The Penny Program was able to provide awards for 5 students, totaling $17,000 last year. In addition, the annual fundraising golf tournament brought in more than $8,000 for future scholarships. MSUSA's other scholarship program is the Jared P. Steen Leadership Scholarship, which recognizes outstanding student leaders. This new program recently awarded its 5th recipient a scholarship. Finally, through MSUSA's Alumni and Friends Association, former students can stay involved with MSUSA's advocacy work, as well as offer current students mentorship and networking opportunities. Now I would like to tell you about some of MSUSA's recent accomplishments. At the system level, MSUSA has helped ensure a strong student voice during all MNSCU policy decisions through committee participation and regular Board of Trustees testimony. In order to ensure a strong student voice, we have increased our presence on each campus and held well-attended conferences. Last year, students voted to create a pilot program with part-time staff on each campus in order to increase MSUSA student involvement, engagement, and participation. In addition, MSUSA has a regular blog and monthly e-newsletter to share information about our work with students and others interested in ensuring a strong state university voice. Also, last year, MSUSA received 2 financial literacy grants totaling $13,000 to help educate students about budgeting, credit cards, and student loans. There were numerous on-campus outreach efforts focused on financial literacy, including both programming and class presentations. At the federal level, students visited Washington, D.C. to meet with congressional staff about important federal initiatives, including the importance of Pell Grants, textbook affordability, and Minnesota's self-loan accessibility. Students have several items they want me to tell you about this legislative session, the first being the importance of affordable tuition. I want to say a huge thank you to the governor and the legislature for the historic investment in tuition freeze in 2013. This made a big difference to our students at the state universities by keeping debt levels down while ensuring quality remains high. We hope you will consider fully funding a tuition freeze again this biennium. Since 2000, students have seen a growing disparity in the relationship between tuition and state appropriations. This trend has led to enormous debt levels. In fact, the average debt level of a 2013 Minnesota University graduate was $30,894. This makes it very difficult for students to start their working lives. Students also support changes to the Minnesota State Grant formula that will help state university students attend and complete their degrees. One good way to do this is to increase the living and miscellaneous portion to the state grant formula. Students have many living expenses while they are earning their degrees, and this change would go along in reducing the need to take on further student debt. Students also thank the legislature for last year's bonding bill, and again support MNSCU's bonding request this year. Bonding money that goes to repair and maintenance, or HEPR, ensures that current and future students learn in a safe, warm, and dry buildings. Meanwhile, new state-of-the-art buildings enhance and foster student learning. MSUSA and MSCSA will hold a joint lobby day on Wednesday, February 18th this year, so you can expect to hear directly from some of our students about these legislative priorities. Lastly, I want to tell you a little bit about myself and why I chose BSU. I knew I wanted to attend BSU the moment I stepped onto campus for my tour. Between the friendly staff and faculty who greeted me with a smile, the beautiful lake that the campus was set on, and the warm, inviting community, I knew it would be a perfect fit for me. The relationship between Bemidji's community and the university is what made my experience special. I was able to get a work-study job off campus through a partnership with BSU and the Boys and Girls Club of Bemidji. I worked at the Boys and Girls Club for 3 years, where I got hands-on experience learning about marketing and communications in a nonprofit organization, which is exactly the career I'm pursuing. The strong relationship between the Bemidji community and the university have also fostered a thriving scholarship program. There are many local businesses, families, and alumni who donate funds for student scholarships. Although I was lucky enough to receive a couple of these scholarships along with working part-time, it wasn't enough to cover the costs of my education. I currently owe $48,000 in student loans for my undergraduate bachelor's degree. This is $48,000 after my scholarships, after my part-time jobs, and after my parents contributed as much as they could. I'm the youngest of four kids. My three older siblings also attended Minsky schools, and my parents helped them out as much as they could. But for an average middle-class family, there's a limited amount that can be contributed while still making ends meet. This is true for many other college students in Minnesota. There are even more students out there who are not receiving scholarships, do not have families that can help them out, and are having to push back their graduation due to having to work full-time to pay to go to school. These are the students that I represent. These students chose to stay in Minnesota and attend Minnesota State schools, and they are struggling to get a valuable education that can lead them to a successful and rewarding career. These students are the future leaders of our state, and right now they need the state to invest in their education. Thank you so much for your time. Now I would like to introduce Alexandra Griffin, last year's MSUSA state chair, who will tell you a little more about MSUSA and her experience at Winona State University.
Can you hear me? Does this work for everybody?
I think, yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Chair Nornes, and committee members for giving me this opportunity to come talk to you today. Like Carrie said, my name is Alexandra. I served as the state chair of MSUSA last year, and I currently serve on MSUSA's alumni board. And I graduated from Winona State University in 2013 with my bachelor's degree. Anybody who's spoken with me in the last 5 years probably knows how much I love Winona State and how much I enjoyed my time there. A wonderful admission staff came to my rural high school in Wisconsin and convinced me to come tour WSU's campus. It didn't hurt that WSU has such a great reputation in our geographical area on the border between our two states. And it's a great four-year school that offered all of the programs that I was interested in. And as soon as I got there, I knew that I had made the right choice. I found a place at Winona State Student Senate. And as early as my freshman year, I was at Representative Pulowski's house talking about the challenges that face higher education in Minnesota. I became then involved in MSUSA, which provided wonderful opportunities for me to make the most of my education. As Carrie told you, I actually received one of the Tim Penny Public Service Fellowships in 2012 that helped me afford an unpaid internship in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. I was elected student body president at WSU and then served on the board of directors of MSUSA. And then after that year, I was elected state chair of the board for the 2013-2014 school year. I even had the opportunity to testify at the Senate Higher Ed Committee, where I spoke about my future, my projected debt, and how scary it was to graduate under such circumstances where there was a lot of uncertainty and doubts about what the future was going to hold for me. So it's been a couple of years since that testimony in the Senate, so I'm here to tell you what it's like to be a WSU graduate in 2015. I'm no longer worried about an uncertain future, but I'm living in a pretty scary reality. Today, I owe $57,000 in student loan debt, and it took me 11 months, but I finally have a job in my field after working for 11 months in a field that not only did not require a four-year degree, but was not something that I was particularly passionate about. I am currently a staffer for U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, and I pay $375 each month towards my student loan debt. And unfortunately, that's really not a very unique situation, as you're hearing. Through my work with MSUSA, this committee, so many of your colleagues in the legislature, the governor's office, and Minnesota's higher education community, I believe there are very few people in this room that think the trend in higher education is sustainable, which was proven by the legislature's commitment last year to higher education, freezing tuition, and I speak for so many students when I say thank you to all of you in this room and everybody who made that possible. I continue to stay involved on the MSUSA alumni board because I know how critical these issues are to our communities and the communities where our schools are located. We know the connection between higher education and the workforce and the overall health of our communities, as you heard the president of IFO kind of touch on earlier. Although some disagree on the means, the end, I know it will take all of us to solve the problems that we're faced with today. I'm not naive or overly idealistic. I know there are real challenges, real decisions to be made. But after last year's remarkable work, I'm optimistic and I'm recommitted to the effort. Your college years are supposed to be marked by growth and personal development and result in the ability to contribute to our state and our country. But unfortunately, mine, like so many others, are actually marked by a monthly reminder of the incredible and sometimes seemingly insurmountable obstacle that I now have in my life. So I'm here today in hopes to help continue the great work that the state of Minnesota has been doing to reverse the trend in higher education, and thank all of you for your commitment to this work as well. I know that we can get the work done, and that it will keep our strong states and our healthy economy, and that in order to keep these things, that we have to do this work. So I am here to thank you all for that work, and Carrie and I are open to any questions you might have.
Thank you both for being here and for your testimony, and the fact that you know Representative Pawlowski has to be a plus for you as well. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Griffin, why don't you tell them why you're at my house and what happened there?
Because we were having dinner.
And who was cooking it?
Ms. Griffin.
This is why we have a gap.
Memorable evening.
And funding.
Yeah.
I think someone was cooking you burgers and hot dogs and Polish sausage, if I recall, because I was doing it.
Yeah. You and your
Mr. Chair,
wife.
This is our way of trying to feed students when they're so in debt that they have to come to my house to get a meal.
It's true. He's doing his part. Thank you.
Well, none of us have been invited to your house, I don't think, either.
Mr. Chair, I know your brother-in-law very well.
I know.
And after my conversations with him, I doubt whether that's going to happen.
All right. I don't see any other questions. Or I do. Actually, Representative McDonald has a question.
I do?
Do you?
Okay. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. See, the debt that Ms. Cooper mentioned, the $48,000 after a four-year school, not two-year, Representative Grunhagen, four-year, and that is including your aides and your grants and work study, is that correct?
Yeah.
So the question, and maybe you can't answer this, but I think you're representing the student facility or the student organization, correct?
Yep.
So I saw on a graph when Minscu did a report, an overview of Minscu and the universities, there was a chart that showed the debt, the grants, loans, and then work study, student work study. That was at 3%. The others were up to 38% and 40% and higher, but 3%. Now, back in the day, many of us, still today perhaps, work our way through college. That's how you pay so you don't have to have debt. So do you know why that would be so low, that only 3% of the students are on a work study that's working their way through college?
Who would care to answer that?
Sure. Well, I know that not all students qualify for work study, so not all students do have that opportunity. So I think that's why a lot of students turn to other part-time positions and sometimes full-time positions, because it's all dependent on what you qualify for financial aid, whether or not you qualify for work study.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. So I guess I have a learning to do. So not all students can work their way through college on the work study? There's not enough work? Or just only those who are eligible in meeting a financial criteria?
Right. Yep. They have to meet a financial criteria to get the work study specific positions. So a lot of other students will work part-time at restaurants or retail stores or whatnot if they don't qualify for work-study positions.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative McDonald.
Thank you. And then just lastly, asking some questions earlier with the Chancellor, I found out that that percentage is not included in that 3%. I think that would be important to know, that how many other students are indeed working and earning money to pay, but that particular number was not included, so...
Representative Pugh, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, ladies, for your testimony. It was very, very interesting. My question is for Ms. Cooper with regard to the financial literacy program that you spoke to, the grant. And I'm wondering if you happen to know from whom that grant was given to Bemidji.
Well, it was actually given to MSUSA as a whole, our whole organization. So I don't exactly know where we got the grant, but I could get you that information.
I would be appreciative to have that, and I would, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you. I would also be interested to know what students, at what year in their degree did they take that financial literacy course?
Sure. Well, I know just Cooper. In my experience as being when I was involved in the financial literacy campaign at BSU, we actually did programming on campus for all students. It wasn't through academics. It was just something that our organization did kind of as a program and as a campaign. Mm-hmm. So those opportunities to learn, like we held lectures about budgeting and credit card usage and student loans. So those opportunities were open to anyone on campus.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you. Yes, I would appreciate if there is any follow-through sure. that you could do. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for your presentation, and
you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Next, we're going to hear from the junior colleges for Minnesota State College, or the Student Association for the two-year schools. And we have Kaylee. Kaylee... the Schumacher, right? William Tooley. Welcome. And you have... good deal. Everything's working. So who's going to start?
Chair Nornes, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kaylee Schoonmaker, and I'm the president of the Minnesota State College Student Association. I wanted to thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today and then just tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a student at Century College and St. Paul College, so I'm duly enrolled. And I started my academic career up at Itasca Community College. I'm from a small town called Pingilly, just outside of Grand Rapids. And I'm here today to tell you about an association that changed my life and continues to change students' lives every single day. The Minnesota State College Student Association is an association made up of Minnesota's public two-year community and technical college students. The MSCSA is working to ensure accessible, quality, and affordable public higher education. And the MSCSA is providing students with representation, leadership development, and communication across the state. Membership reaches every corner of the state, from International Falls to Winona and everywhere in between. We're a 501c3 organization, which means our efforts are strictly nonpartisan and focused on higher education. The MSCSA has four statewide elected representatives who act as our leadership, and all four of them are here today. Our Vice President, Carrie Molesky, is from Anoka Technical College. Our Public Relations Coordinator, William Tully, is from Minneapolis Community and Technical College. And our Treasurer, Matthew Rubel, is from St. Paul College. We also have leadership at all of our campuses and regional leadership as well. Students from all around the state come together to attend our seven conferences every year, including our largest conference, the October Leadership Summit. The trainings that we offer focus on leadership skills such as conflict resolution and building an effective team. We focus on career and life skills such as resume building and cultural competency. We also do some civic engagement and train our students on Get Out the Vote campaigns and caucus trainings. We also have civic engagement, and we train students for advocacy work on higher education and advocacy work for in the future on whatever issues they are passionate about. At the campus level, we also train students on effective budget consultation and make sure that they're active in understanding why and how budget decisions are made on campus and that they do have a role in how that plays out. We advocate on the federal, state, Minsky system, and campus level, and our nonpartisan advocacy efforts include a regular presence at the Capitol, an annual advocacy day in St. Paul, which Ms. Cooper referenced, will be on February 18th, and our students from all around the state will be coming to meet with their representatives and talking about the issues that we're focused on. We have an annual trip to D.C. where we meet with our congressional leadership there, and we also have students serving on all of the Minsky system committees. The next portion of my presentation is going to focus on the MSCSA's priorities, state legislative priorities for the year, and the first one is around college affordability and tuition. Our students pay the third highest tuition and fees in the country and the highest in the Midwest. Our technical programs often have higher costs for equipment, textbooks, and sometimes even just the classes. Even after financial aid, 16 of the top 50 most expensive colleges are in Minnesota, and you can find a handout in your packets that references that. The tuition freeze has been a huge help to students, and we want to thank all of you that were part of that. Our community and technical colleges are places across the state where anybody can come and receive an education. The students that attend these colleges are the students that will be a huge part of filling the state's workforce needs. And one of the best things about our institutions is that they cover every corner of our state, and these students will be able to meet regional workforce needs and the state's needs. To reinforce this point, I'd like to turn over briefly to Mr. Tully to share a short story.
Mr. Tully, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is William Tully, for the record. Thank you for this opportunity to share my story with you all. I'm a student at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and roughly 2 years ago, I moved to the state of Minnesota to be closer to my family. At the time, I was a student of Northwest Florida State College, a four-year institution in my hometown of Fort Walton Beach. And while I was contemplating the move, I didn't consider the cost of tuition an important factor to consider. I assumed, just as any student would, that going to a community college would be the more affordable option than coming from a four-year institution. And so you can imagine my surprise when after I had moved, I discovered that I'd be paying twice as much as I did coming to a community college in Minnesota than at a four-year institution in Florida. So I think this has really made me consider the issue of affordability to be a priority for me, and I really hope that moving forward, we can also consider it a priority for all of us as well. I know all of us want community and technical colleges in Minnesota to be an affordable option for our students, and I hope to continue in my work for that, and I hope you guys do as well. Thank you.
Can you share with the committee what your goal is, or what you're taking in the community college, what courses?
Sure. Right now, I'm going for my business two-year degree, and I hope to transfer, actually, to the U of M.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You have
Chair Nornes?
Yes, go ahead.
So thank you for sharing your story with us, Will. The Minnesota State College Student Association supports the $142 million request. We believe that it would be an investment in all students' lives, an investment in the state's workforce, and an investment in the state. The next issue that I'd like to talk about is the Minnesota State Grant Program. The MSCSA believes that a strong financial program will help many students. The current living and miscellaneous allowance in the program formula doesn't accurately reflect true living costs. It's below the nine-month poverty level right now. We're very excited to see the governor's proposal that came out just today that, to raise that to the federal poverty level, so we are happy to see that. Most students are not living extravagantly, our students especially. Our students are people that are working, people that are trying to support their families, and a higher recognized living expense as part of the formula would benefit them greatly. And additionally, increasing the LME would benefit all students equally that are eligible for the state grant. Another piece of the state grant program that the MSCSA is prioritizing is to find some help for part-time working students. So in 2013, legislation was passed to prorate the assigned family responsibility for working part-time students. And prior to this, part-time students who worked received less support from the state grant program relative to both full-time students and part-time students who do not work. Even the smallest increase in aid can help these students in a real way. Even an additional $50 or $100 makes a huge impact for these students. The average age of a student at our colleges is 27, so you can see that there really is no traditional college student anymore. Some students still take the path directly from high school into college and enroll full-time, but that is only one of many possible scenarios. More and more of our students are returning to college after years in the workforce, and more of our students are coming back to school after starting a family. More of our students are working part or full-time, some even with multiple jobs, so that they can afford to further their education and invest in their future. These students that I'm talking about, they aren't going to school part-time to make their lives easier. They're going to school part-time because they have to, because it's all they can afford to do at this point in their lives. And these students deserve equity in this important grant program. And the last issue that I would like to talk about with all of you today is the transfer of credits. In 2014, there was a transfer guarantee pathways legislation that was passed, and the plan is still being worked on by a Charting the Future implementation team and is due to the legislature by March 15th. Credit transfer has been a passionate and consistent topic with our students for years. Although we are part of a system, the transfer of credits has proven time and time again to be messy and confusing for students. We know that there are students that transfer successfully, but we need a more transparent and seamless transfer system to make sure as many people as possible can be successful in their transfer. We have heard great frustration from our students when they take a course that should transfer and doesn't. 12 credits at Century College is $2,149. To lose all or some of those credits would be devastating for me. The legislation passed last year takes a great step towards a more seamless transfer pathway, and we hope that it can solve a part of the puzzle. The Minnesota State College Student Association is 100,000 students with one powerful voice. Our students are passionate and dedicated. Our students will be the people fixing your cars, repairing your roofs, responding to emergencies, staffing nursing homes, and so much more. Our students are the next leaders of this land. We are always learning, always pushing, and we are driving change in higher education. We look forward to working with you, and we hope that we can earn your support. Thank you, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you both for being here. We have, Representative Norton, I guess, is first.
Sure. Sorry. Representative Isaacson, he'll be next. One of your slides a couple back, you talked about funding for students that are part-time, and that's been an issue. Having just come back from the Complete College Conference, one of the pieces of data that we know is that students that go part-time graduate at a far less percent. And so there's a nationwide effort to have less students be part-time and have more students be full-time. And so I'm wondering if there's an initiative, if you've given any thought to a proposal that might encourage students to not work, and for that effort of taking more credits and graduating faster, they would get more help in paying for their college and living expenses.
Chair Norton, Representative Norton. To answer your question, we haven't talked about that specifically. That's a very interesting point. And as I said in my remarks, our students are going part-time because they have to. Mm-hmm. I think if we can make college more affordable for these students, it would definitely make it easier so that they could maybe take more courses. So it's definitely something that, you know, we're willing to explore and maybe talk to in more depth at a later date. Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
And Mr. Chair?
Norton?
Yeah, I think this is an issue worth pursuing. The data is pretty clear that if kids are going to graduate, they need to take 15 credits if they're going to graduate in 4 years. A lot of kids don't do that, including my own, worked part-time and gone to school, and there should not be a disadvantage for those students. I agree. But if we can incent students to graduate in 4 years or in 2 years rather than drag it on, I think in the end they end up saving money. We get people in the workforce sooner, which is something we desperately need in the state and will continue to need moving ahead. And so I'd be happy to chat with the student group and others about trying to find an alternative that gets students through college faster and yet still be successful and not hurt their family lives. So I really appreciate that and look forward to talking with you.
Chair Nornis, Representative Norton, if I could just give a quick response.
Go ahead.
We are very happy to talk about that, and I would just point out that some of our other initiatives, like the credit of transfer, is aiming to get people through the education quicker and into the workforce, because we see that as a big need. So, thank you.
Representative Isaacson.
Mr. Chair, I'm just really proud of my people. They're awesome. It's a great organization. Thanks.
Okay. Good.
Thank you.
Good way to end. Thank you very much for your testimony. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Next, we'd like to call Students for Education Reform is the next group. Latasha Gandhi, is that how I pronounce it?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not having a real good day pronouncing names.
You did great.
Jamisa Jackson?
Jamisa Jackson. She actually had to go to work, so we're going to have a student another student testify in her place.
That's fine.
Micah Thorne.
Okay. So, Tasha, you go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Sir Chair Nornes and committee members. My name is Latasha Gandhi, and I am the managing director for an organization called Students for Education Reform. What we do is we organize college students on their college campuses to bring awareness around the achievement gap and to also address the issues that directly affect us. Today, I brought with me Micah Thornquist, and she will bring up an issue that our students have identified as a priority for themselves this year, as well as their community.
You can slide closer to that microphone, that'd be great. And again, then introduce yourself for the record.
Does that work? Can you hear me? Okay. My name is Micah Thornquist. I am currently a senior at Gustavus Adolphus College. However, I will be reading the testimony of my co-member from Students for Education Reform, Jamisa Jackson. Good afternoon, Chair Nornes and members of the committee. My name is Jamisa Jackson. I currently attend Inver Hills Community College. However, my story starts with my entrance into St. Paul Community College. There, I was required to take the AccuPlacer, the exam that would determine my entrance level. Unfortunately, my results indicated remedial course placement. Because of these results, I soon began to question my college readiness. This doubt quickly placed a heavy emotional burden on my will to succeed. Despite this unfortunate setback, I signed up for the required remedial courses. Yes, again, I was faced with another setback. This time, it was financial. Because I came from a low-income background, I was able to sign up for financial aid. I was given a Pell Grant, but after paying for the three required remedial classes, I was shocked at how little of the grant remained. Because so much of my Pell Grant was wasted on these classes, I was unable to get all the necessary materials to succeed in my courses. These costs put a hold on my start to college because we are only granted a limited amount of financial aid. The current system is not designed to support all students. It allows those in need of remediation to slip through the cracks. It is structured with the assumption that every student enters college on track. However, this system is sadly mistaken. It does not allow for all students to be supported and therefore successful in higher education. The system is currently broken. Even today at Inver Hills, I am still taking a remedial course. I have now paid for more than 6 courses that cover material I should have received in high school and do not count towards my graduation. Most of these I have paid for out of pocket. This financial burden becomes even heavier when the money being used for these courses should be going towards my family of 5's financial stability. I also fear that my younger brother will be faced with the same unfortunate reality as he enters college this fall. This will add even more financial stress on my family as well as the emotional strain it will have on his performance. In high school, we are told that we are given the proper classes to get us college ready. Yet somehow, many of us are quickly forced to face the harsh reality of a high school diploma's inadequacy. As I left high school, I felt college ready, but I soon discovered differently. Due to my ill preparation for college, remedial courses have placed both a financial and emotional toll on my college experience. While I have been able to overcome these challenges, I know many others who have not. Therefore, we need to address the status quo. We need co-requisite courses to help alleviate the burden remedial courses place on our students. We should not be hindered by the system's failure to fulfill the promises of a high school diploma. We need a solution now. We need to support all students in their path through college in a way that neither wastes time nor money. Co-requisite courses will do just that.
As Micah mentioned, this is an issue close to many of our students and their families. For some of our students, they have been stuck in remedial courses for 2 years or more, only to find out that they still can't make it to college-level courses. For some of our community members we work with, they are too scared to even go back to college or enter the building for fear of association with the remedial courses and the reality that they may not have the support they need to be successful there. Right now in front of you, you will find a copy of a policy paper that was written by our students, researched and written, and also a one-pager that proposes our solution. Our solution is co-requisite courses. instead of forcing students to go into developmental courses, they should be allowed to go into a co-requisite model that also supports them and gives them the college material at the same time. This problem disproportionately affects students of color and low-income students. It wastes time and financial resources. It places the burden on the student for not being prepared. And it has the greatest effect on MNSCU. And with more MNSCU schools being outside of the Twin Cities, this is not just a Twin Cities problem. This is also a rural problem. We believe MNSCU wants the best for their students. And as mentioned earlier by representatives of MNSCU, they are committed to making college affordable for their students. However, as Representative McDonald mentioned, Minnesota students are paying some of the highest costs to be educated. In addition to the need for a tuition freeze, our students also need co-requisite courses. We believe one of the contributing factors to the high cost that students are paying is remedial courses. By eliminating these courses, you will decrease student costs by an estimated $16 to $18 million, which is what is being spent right now by students in MNSCU alone. This legislation provides differentiated support and equitable support for those who need it. Passing this legislation also not only supports students to be successful academically, but it also is a key step to improving the economic and social well-being of our community. Thank you for your time, and we look forward to engaging with you all on this issue during session to find a solution for Minnesota students. And we can answer any questions that you have at this time.
Thank you very much. We have at least one. Representative Norton, you have a question.
I do, and I'm sorry to be talking so much. I've served on this committee for 10 years now, so I just have all these things stored up, and it's time to ask some of them. The co-requisite course is not a new idea, and certainly not for MNSCU. They were at the Complete College event that I was at, and it is one of the five ideas that is being pushed nationwide to help deal with these issues. So my question is, attending the Complete College event has convinced me that it's something that we need to move ahead on, get away from the developmental and go into the co-requisites. There's great data showing that it's successful in the Chicago City Schools and many other large areas in the country. And so my question is, have you worked with the student groups in the colleges, and have you talked with MNSCU's administration about their thoughts about the co-requisite concept and what ideas they might have about making the change so that this can happen?
Ms. Gandy?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Nornes, Representative Norton. We have reached out to MNSCU and are working to schedule meetings now. Most of our students are a part of the MNSCU system. Our largest representation is in the MNSCU system. So we're hoping to be able to use our students' connection to engage with the MNSCU bodies, the student bodies. But at this time, we have not. The research that you're talking about with Complete College America, our students actually quoted that in the policy paper. And we are actually working to talk with them as well about how to support the solution.
Thank you.
Representative Norton.
And Mr. Chair, and I would say Minnesota is one of the 36 or 7 states, 37, I believe. We were the only one without data. I'll just keep rubbing that in at the conference. But of the 37 states that were there, they all heard the same message. They all know the data. And so I think you will find some friends that might be interested in making some changes. And, in fact, Rochester Community and Technical College, I've heard half the equation, which is we're interested in getting rid of developmental classes, and I'm hoping that the second part of that statement that I have not yet heard is, and we will replace it with co-requisite courses. So I think you'll have interest out there.
Thank you both for being here and your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to hear from the University of Minnesota faculty. We have two representatives here, Gary Gardner, Lynn Berenger. Welcome.
Chair Norns, members of the committee, good afternoon, and thank you for this time to speak with you on behalf of the faculty at the University of Minnesota. I'm Linda Berenger, or Lynn Berenger, my nickname, professor at the university in the schools of nursing, medicine, and public health. My research and teaching at the university has just one goal, and that is improving the health of teenagers and young adults. And with my adolescent health colleagues, I focus on a broad range of issues, from pregnancy prevention to school bullying, and from reducing violence to improving graduation rates. And we have partnered with schools all over our state and taught health professionals in every kind of clinical setting in Minnesota, from community-based clinics to large health systems. During the 30 years I've been at the university, I've advised and taught undergraduates, graduates, and postdoctoral clinical and research fellows from a variety of disciplines, medicine, nursing, nutrition, psychology, social work, and public health. And the center that I direct has graduated close to 150 advanced practice nurses. They all specialize in working with young people. Vast majority live in Minnesota and continue to work in the state. A number of them are teaching in the 2- and 4-year Minsky colleges, as well as 4-year private colleges and at the university. 1/4 of these graduates are from underrepresented racial ethnic minorities. But I'm here today not as a faculty member in the Academic Health Center, but as one of 2 university-wide faculty legislative liaisons. In this role, Professor Gary Gardner and I, who will speak next, we serve as a conduit between the state legislature and the university's faculty senate. How did we come to be in this position of faculty legislative liaison? Well, we were nominated by the steering committee of the faculty senate and then appointed by President Kaler. The steering committee, called the Faculty Consultative Committee, is about a 15-person group elected by the faculty at large, and we guide the agenda for the faculty senate and identify and direct issues that come before the major faculty committees of the university. In what ways do we connect the university's faculty with your work here at the Capitol? Our first commitment is to be engaged with the meetings of the higher ed and capital investment committees for both the House and the Senate. This means that we are able also to offer faculty perspectives on issues that come before your committees, such as the university budget requests. And we also tend to an array of agenda items that come before other pertinent committees of the House and the Senate, connecting faculty with legislators around specific issues. For example, related to my work, university faculty have played consulting roles on school bullying, the advanced practice nurse legislation, and the intense focus on the care of pregnant and parenting incarcerated mothers, to give 3 examples from last year's legislative session. So in short, we seek to serve as a resource to you. And I will let, I'd be happy to answer questions after perhaps Professor Gardner has a chance to introduce himself.
Welcome, Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Gardner. I'm a professor in the Department of Horticultural Science in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences. So I'm on the main campus in St. Paul. And I, as Lynn just mentioned, she and I share this role of faculty legislative liaison. I don't want to add a lot of details. I just want to stress that we really view our role as conduits. And if any of you have questions about specific programs at the university or want to know a little bit more about what's going on, please contact us. If we don't know the answers, we'll put you in contact with the faculty members that are actually doing that work. And we see this as a two-way street for exchange of information. In that context, I don't want to spend a lot of time because we have a number of student groups here that I want to make sure have a chance to be heard by you. But I want to emphasize that we are strongly in support of the President's biennial budget request because I think it represents increasing strength in a broad range of university programs that reach throughout the state of Minnesota. And we also feel strongly that the supplemental capital investment request will be very seriously needed. As you heard last year and the Capital Investment Committee heard last year, we have a lot of deferred needs at the university, and they affect all of us working in the university. So I just want to state that endorsement for those policies, but my real goal in being here is to introduce myself and Lynn, so that if you have questions about any programs at the university, not just things that are new on the agenda, we want to help you find the answers to those questions if we don't know them ourselves. And we'd be very happy to take questions now.
Okay. Thanks for the invitation to contact you. Any member have a question at this point? Seeing none, I thank you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And now we will hear from more students. We have Ashley Hall from the University of Minnesota, I believe. Oh, Andrew? Andrew is there? Ashley?
Yeah, I'm not Ashley.
Okay. No, I
hi, I'm Ashley Hall, and I'm a third-year veterinary student from the University of Minnesota. I want to thank you all for having me today. I'm really excited to be here and represent professional students. And I basically just wanted to take a few moments to try to slow down because I get really excited and talk too fast. But I wanted to talk to you about tuition. That's the biggest issue that I wanted to represent here for professional students. I got involved. I've been really active at the state level trying to advocate and also within the university the past couple years. I got involved at the end of my first year basically because my own personal struggle with debt. I will have nearly $400,000 of debt when I graduate next year for my program. And so basically this, I decided once I got involved in GAPSA, because I'm the current vice president of the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly at the University of Minnesota, I decided to write a resolution and start some research on how we could start addressing this issue. And so I wrote a resolution saying we should fix tuition for all the professional programs. But I started doing research, and I really quickly noticed that talking to the individual CFOs, that wasn't actually a possibility, because there's a couple of reasons. One of the biggest reasons is that they all mentioned they've had budget cuts traditionally from the state in the past 10 years. I think in the past 2 years it's been a little bit better. But the other thing is that because of these budget cuts and the lack of funding, these programs rely really heavily on their student tuition. So, for example, pharmacy, 70% of their budget comes from students. So it doesn't give you a lot of flexibility for them to try to offer a fixed tuition rate. Also, for vet med, where I'm coming from, almost 20% of our budget comes from students. So in order for them to achieve something like that, they would have to inflate the rate so high that it wouldn't really provide us any kind of benefit. And so I decided to start advocating throughout the university, just trying to raise awareness. I ended up going to Senator Terry Bonoff's higher education tour, where I was talking there, and I came to the Capitol a couple different occasions. I went to talk to the Academic Health Center and really just pushed the issue throughout students. But the other issue that they also talked about was, like I was saying, the budget specifically, the budget cuts. And so to give you an example, the veterinary student ranks in the bottom 33% of all veterinary students, all veterinary programs in the country for support that they receive from the state. And so that makes it really difficult for them to have much flexibility. And so I think I kind of want to talk a couple minutes about why I think this might be. I think that the general public looks at professional students as making an investment in their education, and I think that they think with our advanced degree and our high potential earning rate that we are more likely to be able to take care of our student debt. But I'm going to be honest and say that $400,000 is a lot for anybody, and with my interest rates growing, some of my interest rates are up to 8%. That number gets really big quickly, and also you should know that professional students aren't like graduate and undergraduate students in the sense that we have very strict schedules. We can't do part-time. So I'm in class every day from 8 to 5. I'm also a mom, and I also have to learn 40 hours of coursework a week, plus be involved within the school itself, and then I'm on call at night for shifts and clerk duties and all kinds of things. So it leaves very limited time for a part-time job, and that would only be very supplemental. That means we take out full student loans in order to get through our 4 years within our program. So I will be walking out with nearly $400,000 in debt. And so even for somebody, and this too, it's important to know that not everybody with an advanced degree has a high starting salary. My average profession starts off making $70,000, and when I calculated how much my debt payments would be if I really had to pay what I owe, I would be paying my entire salary my first year towards my debt. And so my loan payments work out to be really high if you're not counting the pay-as-you-earn programs and stuff like that. And so that's, I really just wanted to bring attention to the issue because I know we've been trying to support undergraduate students, which I think is wonderful, but I also want to say that we really need support for professional programs because these are our doctors and lawyers and dentists and pharmacists and veterinarians in our community, and we want to make sure we're giving to them as well and that we're making sure that the there's a lot of these programs have a lot of out-of-state students, and we want to make sure they're coming to the state and staying here and investing in our state as well. So I've been trying to do my best to advocate for these issues the best that I know how to, but I really, this year we've written a resolution through GAPSA asking for the university to grant a tuition freeze for all professional programs, and we are hoping, and President Kaler will also be advocating for a freeze for graduate and professional students, and we're really hoping that we can start there. It's not a solution necessarily, it's just a start to the beginning, because at what point will students stop applying to these programs when they're already too high as it is? I really question what I was thinking a little bit, but it was my passion, and I wanted to come here, and University of Minnesota is an amazing school, an amazing vet school, and I think that quality is, I'll just finish really quickly, quality is costly sometimes, but it doesn't have to be astronomical. So,
Ms. Hall, thank you very much. With your load, I can understand why you're talking fast.
Yeah.
Representative Isaacson has a question or a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't shushing you or hurrying you along. Oh. I was letting him, you raise your hand to let him know you want to talk.
Oh.
So you're good. I just want to maybe share a little bit about, as a person who's went through a lot of the grad school and has debt, well, I'm not, first of all, thank you, because my debt isn't that much, and that's the first person I met that has more than me, so that was nice of you to be here today.
You're welcome.
I think that the problem isn't just the paying for the student debt and the tuition. You're also talking about how to live as an adult, especially if you've got family and kids, and how you afford the other aspects of life going around. I mean, I was lucky when I went through both master's and PhD programs that I was single, living by myself with a dog, and we could manage a lot of it. But if I tried to go back now with a family, it'd be even more crushing that way. And I think so when we're talking just about tuition, it'd be interesting to see what we could do or have the discussion about what goes beyond just paying for tuition to help supplement and allow, because I know what you're talking about when you're in grad school, at least the later part of it. I won't pretend to compare to the hard sciences in terms of our rigor, but I will say that there just isn't time to be able to work because you're so busy doing work for school. And so what can we do to support people in that situation if they're not getting help through the school itself? And even just going back down to the four-year, you know, what Representative Norton said was correct. They're working, they're not in school, they're not in school, they're not graduating. So thank you.
Ms. Hall, one question. I guess I may have missed it, but your career path is?
Veterinary medicine.
Okay.
So it's a four-year degree, and I'll be a doctor of veterinary medicine when I graduate.
And that will be when?
Next year in May of 2016.
Okay, great. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
Mr. McNally.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can I have you hold up for just a minute? We have another question.
Thank you,
Representative
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenthal.
And I'm just interested in the interest rate you're paying. You're saying you're paying 8%?
Well, I take out Grad Plus loans and the unsubsidized loans. That's the other thing about being a professional student is you don't get offered. We don't have scholarships and grants, not very many. There's some small ones that you get. But overall, we professional students have to take out all loans. And so right. The Grad Plus loan is a terrible, terrible loan. But I have to take it out to survive. And I'm basically, with my child and I, we're actually under poverty. I mean, we're really living. I was a couple months late on rent. So
I understand that, and thank you for that. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but is there any way or is there any approach to reduce the interest rates, because we're at historic lows right now? You should not be paying 8% on your loans.
Well, that was my first year so 3 years ago. They have lowered since then, and I know that there are some senators like Al Franken that's been trying to work on students being able to receive the current interest rates as they're lowering, but for the Grad Plus loan I took out in 2012, it's, you know, that loan will be at 7.9%.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rosenthal,
that's really a hard position to be in, and I feel for you. And I hope there are ways where we can figure out ways to refinance some of these debt to a much more to a much lower rate and much more manageable payments.
Thank you. And there's definitely, I just want to say also, there's really a lack of loan forgiveness too for a lot of these programs, so that makes it really difficult.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Now, Mr. McNally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to move over here for a second. I'm not quite as good at speaking off the cuff, so I'll read from some notes. My name is Andrew McNally. I am a PhD student at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, and also a graduate instructor in the College of Liberal Arts. I'm also the current president of the Council of Graduate Students at the University of Minnesota. Our organization represents 8,000 research-focused PhDs and master's students, among the largest cohorts of emerging scholars, teachers, and researchers in the United States. We come from around the country and even the world, but we arrive here to solve the problems, teach the students, and promote the achievements of the state of Minnesota. 80,000 of us, or more than a third of all alumni of the University of Minnesota living in-state, remain here after to work, live, and contribute to our communities. Many of us are teaching the tens of thousands of undergraduates at the university, on average receiving as good or better teacher ratings than faculty, and pioneering the higher education system of the future. But most of us are making or will make our mark outside the ivory tower. At this university, graduate students are playing key roles in improving the production of corn and barley in greater Minnesota, of closing the considerable achievement gap in the city of Minneapolis, in better understanding how to make our criminal justice system more equitable statewide and nationwide, our mining practices more sustainable, bringing better health care places with low population density, and pioneering new cures for the ills, both bodily and social, shared by all people in Minnesota and around the world. Of course, when accounting for the debits and credits of graduate education's common good, there's a lot that we can't monetize, but please consider that by fellowship funding, one of the most crucial measures of attracting the best and brightest emerging scholars to the university, the national leader among public universities alone has half the graduate students, but six times the funding of the University of Minnesota. So you know that we have to have a challenge. Obviously, our university has a responsibility to close some of the gap with public-private partnerships, but I would ask you both to hold a candle to the administration to help them and to help them do so by investing more in graduate education, an investment in the common good of Minnesota. So I strongly encourage you to support the president's budget request for graduate and professional tuition freeze, also to encourage finding ways in the university to cut the costs of graduate and professional education, and also to support the Healthy Minnesota and Vibrant Communities initiatives in President Kaler's budget request, which will continue to help attracting the best and brightest researchers and teachers to the University of Minnesota and to the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McNally. And where are you as far as where's graduation?
I got one more year.
One more year.
Yep.
Okay. Good. Questions? Oh, Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your testimony.
Sure.
You referenced two, I'm not sure if it's an organization or a program, Common Good Minnesota and Healthy Minnesota and Vibrant Communities. I'm assuming that latter is an initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Could you offer any further clarification about either of those?
Mr. McKelly?
So the Common Good Minnesota, I was just referring to graduate education in general contributing to the common good of the state of Minnesota in principle. Vibrant Communities, I believe, is a $14 million initiative that is included in the president's budget proposal, which helps to support a number of initiatives throughout greater Minnesota, including improving sustainable mining practices in greater Minnesota.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. McNally.
Thank you.
No more questions, I guess. So thank you very much for being here and
thank
for
you.
Testimony. Ryan Olson is going to be next, and our last presenter today representing the Minnesota Student Association. Ryan and
friend. My name is Joel Stengler. I'm the student body president at the University of Minnesota right now.
Thank you very much for both being here.
Yeah, and I'll start off. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for having us today. My name is Ryan Olson. I'm a current student at the University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities studying political science with the intention to be a social studies teacher. I also hail from Moorhead, Minnesota, so I'm a proud product of greater Minnesota. And I currently serve as the executive director of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, which represents all five University of Minnesota campuses today. And
Mr. Olson, you just hit a nerve. I think Ben Leon has a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Olson, is your brother Kyle?
My brother is Kyle Olson.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Sorry to interrupt you, but that sounded like something important. So.
I think it was. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right.
We formed the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition a few years ago, and our objective is to take student concerns to outlets beyond our campuses, including the state legislature and the federal government. Past initiatives have included the medical amnesty bill for underage consumption and advocating for a tuition freeze for University of Minnesota students 2 years ago. Today you'll hear from me and the president of the Minnesota Student Association, Joel Stangler. I want to first start off by speaking about what our students have decided are the most important things to talk about this legislative session. The first is college affordability. The University of Minnesota is our state's flagship institution, but one of the major concerns we have as students is maintaining its affordability without sacrificing the quality of education and the services we receive from the school. That is why we're here today to express our support for another tuition freeze proposal. Freezing tuition at our school would save the average undergraduate between $2,100 and $2,500 each year. For many students, that means allowing them to work fewer hours during the week so they can focus more time on their academics. For others, that may mean taking out fewer loans. The impact of this tuition freeze, or lack thereof, has immediate consequences for students starting the next academic year. This is why we want to make clear that we support the tuition freeze as well as other efforts to keep the cost of higher education affordable. There are other aspects of the university's budget request that we support, as Andrew mentioned just a little bit ago, but our number one priority is the tuition freeze. And we want to thank the state for its historic investment 2 years ago. Secondly, we're interested in alleviating the financial burden on students after they graduate. This can come in a variety of ways, maybe through loan refinancing or perhaps through tax credits for recent graduates. Finally, the post-secondary child care grant is one way the state accommodates student parents as they try to raise their kids while taking classes. This grant is open for students or student parents pursuing 2 or 4-year degrees, but who may fall out of the traditional safety net through the state. Currently, the eligibility for the program is 4 years, but there are plenty of students who spend more than 4 years at institutions and who run out of eligibility for this grant. We are working with the Office of Higher Education to study the feasibility of an expansion proposal, and we look forward to working with them and the committee on the future proposal. But that is just a quick overview of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition's priorities, and we look forward to providing student voice to many of the conversations at this committee throughout the session. The only thing I want to mention is you can hear more stories from students on February 12th, which will be Support the U Day. We'll be around the Capitol Complex all day that day, so just come stop by, get some buttons, get a Honeycrisp apple, which was developed at the University of Minnesota, and we'd love to say hi to you then. And now I'm going to hand it over to the president of the Minnesota Student Association, Joel Stangler.
Please identify yourself for the record.
What was that? I'm sorry.
I just need you to introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Joel Stangler. I'm the student body president at the University of Minnesota, and I represent the 30,000 undergraduates at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. And so all five of the campuses are represented in the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, and however, I just represent the Twin Cities campus. That's important to note. It's easiest for me to get here, so most of the time I'm speaking on behalf of all the other campuses in terms of their interests, but it's always great to hear it straight from them. So please don't take my word as what every other campus wants to see on their campus. We can explain what we do best by just explaining what our priorities are and what we're advocating for this year. I'd like to echo everything that Ryan said about the tuition freeze and affordability, and then some. We really are very interested in working with the legislature this year to work on the performance metrics, if that's of interest, attaching that to the university funding again this time around, and because we really think that there should be a student voice in that process. So please let us know if that's a point of interest in working together. I want to talk broadly today about four things. Generally, the support of the university budget request. 2-year tuition freeze is obviously the number one priority for us. But then some other aspects of affordability that often get forgotten, one of which is the student fees. And I want to be very clear that the student fees are very complicated, even for students to understand and have those be transparent to them. But there are certain fees that are actually not raised or lowered or even evaluated or assessed by the university or the administration. They're directly by students. And so that's really important to remember, that if fees go up, that doesn't necessarily mean that tuition went up. It means that
democratically elected and selected group is deciding what services students need, and I would say that those are really good investments because it's students deciding what services other students need. And so on your handout, you can see that services that are paid for by those dollars are Boynton Health Service, the Aurora Center, Recreation and Wellness, our Legal Services, the Learning Abroad Center, and the Student Conflict Resolution Center. All of those are funded by student fees, and so an increase in student fees isn't necessarily always a bad thing. Just important to remember that it's not always the administration weighing in on those types of increases. And areas that we see needing increase nationally, mental health is something that is chronically underfunded. And so if that does go up and that fee does end up going up because the students decided we need that service, I don't want that to reflect poorly on the institution because it was students deciding where we want our own dollars to go, as well as further support for sexual assault victim services, which we know is, again, another underfunded and important issue to be addressing. And then under the scope of affordability as well, we want to work together with our MNSCU counterparts and talk about the pipeline for transfer students and making sure that they are graduating on time, as well as students who are admitted as freshmen and getting the same types of jobs that the students who are at the university for 4 years are, because they're making a very similar investment. So those are points of interest under affordability, and I want to leave you today talking about a topic that is hard to address but absolutely needs to be, and it's sexual assault prevention on our campus. We've been working very closely with our institution to evaluate our current consent and sexual assault policy on an institutional level, but there has been interest expressed by representatives to have a statewide requirement to update the consent policies for every school that receives state funding. So we look forward to coming back, hopefully, and testifying on that. We are still evaluating our support on that and the best way to implement it, but that's something that can be kept on the radar, and we're a great resource to talk about how that might impact students and why it's good for students, as well as working with the Department of Education to update the standards of high school curriculum. Our sex ed curriculum is something that we probably don't always want to talk about updating, and this isn't necessarily about the sex ed curriculum. It's really more talking about how we can instruct students on how to have healthy relationships and implement affirmative consent in the education system right now, because what we basically have right now is students coming into higher education institutions with, you know, a remedial understanding of consent, and they're not receiving it in high schools. And so that's something that we look forward to working with all levels of the education system and really addressing the issue, because from our perspective, one of the reasons that sexual assault is such an issue in college really is stemming from the fact that there's a lack of education happening in the K-12 system about sex. So that's everything we have for you today, and we look forward to your questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Barrett, sure. You look like you have a question.
You're a good mind reader, Mr. Chair. Mr. Olson, question for you about your thoughts on a tuition freeze as it relates to additional funding request by the University of Minnesota. And the question is more for really everyone who's testified and all the folks who have and will continue to testify on a tuition freeze if the U of M and other MNSCU colleges get more money. Why wouldn't you be asking for a tuition reduction? I mean, if the U of M or colleges are getting more money, and the U of M especially has a plan to reduce and make their overhead more efficient, why wouldn't the combination of those two result in you guys paying less money, not the same money? It seems like that would be a more appropriate goal, or maybe more, appropriate goal for what they would be receiving.
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you so much for your question. I think we're all of the agreement that a tuition freeze is maybe not the long-term solution to address college affordability. The question of a tuition reduction is really interesting. I guess I'm not sure how to answer that question, so I have to get back to you with how the system and university students feel about it. But I can assure you that paying less for college sounds like a very appealing answer at this time. And as to the university side of things, I'm not going to necessarily try to answer for them, but to me that question is better directed for the university. But affordability is a question that goes far beyond my capacity and knowledge. So,
Representative Baird, do you have a second follow-up?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Olson, thank you very much. I was testing that question on you. I do plan on raising that to the U of M when they get here, and I'm sure you'll be supporting that, I would imagine. When you ask the folks back at the U of M, talk to as many students about why that wouldn't be a an option, as you do faculty. With no offense to faculty, but I know, you know, going back to a lady who testified earlier, who when she talked about a tuition freeze in the professional areas, someone at the university said, no, that can't happen. Boy, you know, I'm not in academia, but I'm an analyst, and somebody gives me a problem, I try to find a way to answer that problem or find a solution. And I think that at least, you know, at our universities, they owe our students at least that level of courtesy to find a way to do something, even though maybe the challenges are extreme. Because I think you guys would deserve a decrease. If you're going to, the university's going to get that money, I think a decrease would be the appropriate response by the university. So I just want to leave you with that level of information.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, for some programs, the cost of delivering those programs is going up, and I think specifically in the vet program, I know that program, I believe, it takes a lot of money to train students how to be veterinarians. But it's absolutely a question we can look at for all of our programs moving forward, and so we'll make sure we do that. Thank you.
Representative Christensen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Olson and Ms. Stangler, where does the Minnesota Student Association receive their funding from?
Who wants to answer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Christensen, we receive our funding through the student service fees process, and I know where your follow-up question is going if you choose to have one, so I'll answer that now. Drew was actually on MSA with us a few years ago, so we go way back. We get our fees from the student service fees process and recognize that being the group that selects the selectors who decide the student service fees does pose some sort of conflict of interest, and we've made efforts this past year to ensure that there's an application process for those who do select who selects the committee. That hasn't happened in the past. There's never been an application process, and then our group of student elected representatives had to confirm those appointments. So we're working at eliminating the conflict of interest. However, the policy is, you know, a Board of Regents policy. That's one that's set at a very high level. So it'll take about a year or two to eliminate that conflict.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Ms. Stangler, and congratulations on your attending the State of the Union address. What an honor.
Thank you.
You want to tell us more about that? I don't think. You were a guest of someone, I presume?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Christensen, members of the committee. I was fortunate enough to be invited by Senator Al Franken, who's done a lot of work on college affordability, and invited me because we've been very vocal about college affordability. So it was a great experience. And
did you talk about interest rates?
We did, yep.
Good.
Yep, we did. We talked about the Banking on Students Act, I think is what it's referred to.
Right. Well, thank you both for being here.
Mm-hmm.
And good luck in your stay in school.
Yeah. Thank you again.
If there's nothing further, we're